From the mother's point of view, it was a very critical time in her son's life. As a matter of fact, he was about to go through a transition that would be safe to say was the most major transition he had made up until that point. And she felt very deeply that she should say something, and that she should say something of significance to him. What was the occasion? Her 15-year-old son was about to enter high school for the first time. Now, what do you say of significance to a 15-year-old who's about to go to high school? How about do your homework? How about study hard? I guess in this day you might throw in something like, and stay away from drugs. Well, as she was telling me the story, it seemed to me that in essence what she told him was this: choose your companions carefully. Now, any of us who've had children will immediately identify with the wisdom of that. But nevertheless, let me ask a question. Why is that such good advice? The answer to that question may appear obvious, though the extent of it may not be as obvious as you think. So I'd like for us to probe that a bit today. Why is that such good advice? The answer to that question is not only helpful for teenagers, but frankly, it's good for adults as well. The answer is in Proverbs chapter 1. So will you turn with me once again to the book of Proverbs chapter 1, and I'm going to begin reading with verse 10. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let's swallow them alive like Sheol, and whole like those who go down to the pit. Who shall find all kinds of precious possessions? We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. But they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owner. The structure of this passage is rather unique. Solomon begins in verse 10 by saying, if sinners entice thee, consent not. In other words, he begins with the conclusion, which is a perfectly appropriate literary device that a lot of authors use. Chronologically, there is a whole lot going on before we get to that kind of conclusion. So I'm going to change the order just a bit, and I want us to begin by looking at the request that provoked that response. So first of all, we're going to look at the request that was made. Then we'll come back and look at the response that Solomon says you ought to give. And finally, we will look at the reason that he says you ought to give it, which is what I think is critical in understanding this concept. So we're going to just do a survey of running through this passage, and then we're going to come back and really probe some of the depths of it. I want to begin with the request, which actually begins in verse 11. He said, if they say, now let's pause for just a second, because I'm starting at verse 11, I got to explain who they is. They is obviously a reference to the sinners in verse 10. And in the Hebrew text, the way the word sinners is written, it means habitual sinners. So right away, we need to put into focus that the people that are doing this are habitual known sinners. That's obvious from what they're about to say. And notice in verse 10, he says, if they entice thee. And that word is actually a little stronger in the original text. If they try to persuade you. So what's going on here is that some people who are known for habitually being involved in things that are wrong are trying to persuade Solomon's son to come with them. What he says in verse 11, if they say, come with us. Oh, what are we going to do? We're going to go to the beach and have a party? Not exactly. Look at verse 11. Let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, and the whole like those who go down to the pit. The invitation, the request, if you will, is, hey, come go with us. We're going to go ambush some innocent people. Now, it is very clear. Solomon makes this explicitly clear. This is not we're going to go get even with somebody. This is not that we're going to take vengeance on somebody. These people that we're going to lie in wait for are innocent, and they are without cause. They are undeserved of what the plot is against them. There is groundless reason for doing this. Nevertheless, they say, come with us, and we're going to wait, lie in wait to shed blood, verse 11. So what he has in mind is murder. We're going to hurt somebody. Look at verse 12. Let's swallow them like Sheol. Sheol is a reference to the grave, and it says in the latter part of that verse, and the whole like those who go down to the pit. This is just a vivid picture. He said, now what we're going to do these people is going to be like the old earth opening up and just swallowing them. By the way, that kind of thing happened in the book of Numbers. But that's the picture that's here. And maybe the implication is when we get done, they're going to disappear, and they're going to disappear without a trace, and we're not going to have anybody around to tell tales. So we're going to go harm somebody. That's the request. There's a little more to this request, and it's in verse 13. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. Precious meaning nothing more than costly or expensive. So what they're after is killing somebody so that they can rob them. This is clearly a sinister plot by a group of sinners. So the request is, come, let us go kill somebody so we can take their possessions. Now, to any person with any kind of a moral sense, that is immediately repugnant. But before you jump to that conclusion, just for a second, I want to pause and say, notice some of the appeal in this. That might not have any appeal to you. It doesn't to me. But just notice some of the appeal to this. In the first place, obviously, the intent, what they're going to get out of this is possessions, quick riches. We're going to get a lot of riches. As a matter of fact, that's the whole point, because in verse 13 it says, we will fill our houses with spoil. We're going to not only get some valuable goods, we're going to get lots of them. So there is the whole idea of possessions. That's the robbery part. Maybe part of the motive for the murder part has to do with power, having power over somebody. Perhaps that's involved. And maybe, we don't know, but maybe, sure sounds like they're taking a lot of pleasure in this. And as perverted as that may sound to some, there are those who get pleasure out of crime. And even murder, so much so that it becomes addictive. The adrenaline rush produces a high that criminals go after. But I think the appeal in that, in this whole thing, is this. It is the idea that we are going to go do this together. Notice that he says in verse 11, come with us. Verse 14, cast in your lot with us and let us all have one purse. So the idea throughout this whole thing is we are going to do this together. Come with us. We're going to commit this crime involving robbery. We're going to put it all in one pile. We're going to have one purse. And apparently the meaning of verse 14 is we're going to cast lots and divide the spoils. But the whole idea, the beginning and the end of the request, is we're going to do it together. I think the great appeal is that we're going to do this in a group. It's almost the gang mentality that exists among some teenagers. The reason they do it, isolated and alone, they might not do the kinds of things that gangs do. But in a gang, there's a great appeal to just belong. Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting to belong to something. That's a natural, God-given need. We need to belong to a group. Nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, there's a lot good with that. You ought to belong. God never intended that we live isolated on an island. He intended that we live in groups and that we learn to love one another. So that's a good thing. The problem is that sometimes the group mentality can be detrimental. And it doesn't just apply to teenagers, and it doesn't just apply to gangs. It can apply to adults as well. It can apply to adults who engage in business. And they say, come, let us, and in essence, rob people, and in the process, hurt them. So it might not be as radical or as extreme as what is stated here, but it's the principle nevertheless. And I think that is particularly true of people who are involved in sales. And I can say that because I've been involved several times in my life in sales. And I've been associated with groups of people who would like to shade the truth just a bit. And so the idea is the same, and you feel the pressure of the group. And believe me, those groups build on that kind of a thing. You got to be part of the group, and you got to excel in the group, and they play on competition and the like. And so there is this idea that you belong to this group, you belong to this company, you got to do this, and you get sucked up in the group mentality. So I think that's the great appeal. Come with us. Let us have one purse. Let us do this together. Now it is to that Solomon has a bit of wisdom. He says, I'm going to tell you how to respond to that. And that takes us back to the beginning of the passage in verse 10. My son, if sinners try to persuade you to do something wrong, do not consent. Real simple. Anybody ever suggest that you do something wrong, just don't consent. Nancy Reagan said it real well. Just say no. That's what Solomon is saying. Good, wise advice. But actually, that's only the beginning. Look at verse 15. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. Wow. In verse 10, he says, don't consent. And in verse 15, he says, no, don't even associate with them. Now, notice what he says. Don't walk with them. In the Bible, the word walk is a metaphor for live. Don't live your life with these kinds of people. But it's not just don't walk with them. Don't even put your foot in their path. Just don't even get started. It's that little phrase that leads me to the conclusion that what he's really saying is don't associate with these kinds of people. Just don't even get started. So verse 10 is saying don't consent, and verse 15 is saying don't associate with them. Now, I think I need to pause here just long enough to say, you know, Jesus associated with sinners, right? To win them. And he won some of them. This is different. This is a habitual sinner that's trying to persuade you to do something wrong. That's the difference. So this is not saying don't associate with sinners. Matter of fact, Paul argues that if you did that, you would have to leave the planet. So he isn't saying don't do that. He does that in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, by the way. If you left, if you didn't associate with any sinners, you'd be out of here. You'd be like that little rover on Mars, right? You'd be out there by yourself. All right. Well, the point, though, is that there are some people, when you see their character, you just ought to know, don't go with that, don't associate with them, and don't be with them. As you know, my wife, Patricia, and I are involved in business, and a couple of years ago, somebody came to us with a business opportunity that had a great deal of appeal because, for one thing, we could make some money. Secondly, we could do things we enjoy, and there was some altruistic motive involved in this. We could help a lot of people in the process, and had to do with helping charities raise money. So we made an appointment, and we went to see the man that was in charge of this. In one of the first meetings we had with him, and there was a group involved, he treated some people in this meeting in such a way that it was repugnant to me. It was deplorable. We walked out of that meeting, and I turned to Patricia and I said, if we had a brain in our head, we would get in our car, we would head in the opposite direction, and we would never look back. Did we do that? No. We said, we'll give him a second chance. Did he straighten up?
No.
No. Did he eventually do the same thing to us he did to them?
Yeah.
Well, we went and talked to him. Did that help?
No.
Did we make a lot of money? No, we lost money. Did we do something we enjoyed? In part, we enjoyed the part we had in this venture to some degree. Did we end up helping a lot of people? No. Why? Because you don't live your life built on those kinds of practices. Now, there wasn't anything immoral or illegal going on. Just in this case, it was just a man that didn't know how to treat people. He didn't have any people skills. And he ran people off. So no sooner would people come to the group, they'd get offended by him and they would leave. So you just need to look at the character of the people with whom you deal. Right? Right. Now, what's going on in this passage is Solomon is simply saying, look, here's a request. A group is inviting you to do something that obviously is wrong. And your response ought to be, I'm not going to have anything to do with those people. Now, why is that so important? We think we all know, but I want us to probe that for a bit. Why is that so important? The reason is worth exploring. The answer to that question is worth examining. It starts in verse 16. Look at the text. Verse 16 begins with the word for. Now, you've heard me say before, and you'll hear me say again, when you see the word for at the beginning of a sentence in the Bible, especially in the New Testament, it means I'm about to give you a reason or explanation for what I just said. And this is no different. He says in verse 16, for their feet run to evil, or some texts say sin, and they make haste to shed blood. All right, first reason, there are two. First is, it's evil, it's sin, it's wrong. That's why you don't do this. It's simply wrong. Now, this is the reason I think that we would all immediately recognize. It's wrong. But there's more involved than it just being wrong. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, that evil companions corrupt good habits. The problem is, if you associate with these people, they might influence you to participate in this. They might end up actually succeeding in persuading you. So be careful. Be careful. That's the point. It's wrong, and it could affect you. But beginning in verse 17 and going through verse 19, he gives a second reason why you shouldn't do this. He says in verse 17, "Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood." If you've got a pen, underline that. He's saying, look, this is just like a bird who sees the net and flies into it anyway. Matter of fact, put your finger in chapter 1. We're going to come back. And turn over to chapter 7 for just a second. What he says in verse 17 is a little obscure, but the same kind of reference is made in verse 23 of chapter 7. "As a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would take his life." This bird, the net's been set for him, flies into the net. He sees the net, flies into it anyway, but what he didn't know was it would take his own life. Now go back to chapter 1 and look at verse 17. "Surely in vain a net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood." Now, this is a reference to the habitual sinners. And he said, look, this is wrong, but beyond that, it's not smart. It's not wise. Because what you are really going to do is destroy yourself. I think you need to make a connection in this passage between verse 11, "they lie in wait to shed blood," and verse 17, or verse 18, "they lurk secretly for their own lives, they lie in wait for their own blood." There's the phrase I'm after. So that what Solomon is really saying is, don't do this, not just because it's wrong, but because it's not wise. And it's not wise because it's going to lead to your own self-destruction. The wages of sin is death. So you go commit those kinds of sins and you'll die one way or the other. One other verse in verse 19, he says, "So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owner." So the whole point, beginning in verse 17, is that this is not wise because you are going to end up self-destroying yourself. That's why you should not do this. I want you to turn to a couple of other Proverbs. Turn to Proverbs chapter 16 for just a second. Proverbs chapter 16, and I want you to look at verse 5. "Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. They that join forces, none will go unpunished." This, you see, it's wrong. That's one thing. But the other thing is, this isn't wise because you are going to end up punished. Or look at chapter 17, verse 13. "Whoever rewards evil for good." Remember in this passage in chapter 1, it said they were innocent. We're going to attack them without cause. We're rewarding evil for good. Look at the latter part of 17, 13. "Evil will not depart from his house." That's what this is saying. The reason this is such good advice is not just because it's morally wrong. It's plain stupid. It's unwise because it's only going to hurt you. You lie in wait to shed blood and you end up shedding your own blood. It leads to self-destruction. And all, he ends in verse 19 where there's part of what's going on is that you're greedy. We're going to come back to that in a minute. Years ago, I read a story of a practice in Alaska where when the Eskimos want to kill a wolf, they implant knife blades in the ice and apparently put some kind of food around it. Now here comes the wolf thinking he's going to devour a victim and eat. And he starts licking this thing, and the blade in the knife cuts the wolf's tongue, and he starts bleeding. But he thinks he's killed something, and he takes the blood, and so he keeps going. He's trying to shed blood, and whose blood is he shedding? What a vivid illustration. What a vivid illustration of exactly what Solomon's saying. When you set out to shed someone else's blood, you are really shedding your own blood. The modern proverb is, what goes around comes around. So at this point, I want to summarize the passage, but I'm not done yet. There's lots more we need to look at here. Because I just want you to see the flow of the passage and see what Solomon is saying. And what Solomon is saying is this: do not associate with habitual sinners. Don't consent to them, because it's morally wrong and it's intellectually unwise. Is that what this passage is saying? See how I arrived at that conclusion, moving through it? Let me say the same thing another way. I didn't dwell on this. I want us to go back and pick it up. But I'm going to say the same thing another way. Choose your companions carefully. Because they may just bring out the sinful side of you, and that will lead to your own destruction. May I repeat that? Choose your companions carefully, because they may bring out the sinful side of you, which will lead to your own destruction. Now, I want to go back through this passage. I started by saying the conclusion is at the beginning, and so I changed the order of the first part of it. If I were coming to this passage and I were going to just analyze all of the elements that are involved from a personal point of view, I think I would rearrange the passage radically. If you've got a pencil and a piece of paper and you don't mind taking a note or two, I'm going to walk back through this passage and I want to pick out very quickly five things that are going on. And these five things are the process that this thing is describing. Actually, the first thing that we ought to say is this. There is, in verse 19, a bent toward evil within Solomon's son. Look at verse 19. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. I think logically, the place to start is your own heart. Solomon says, look, what was really going on? Why would you listen to these people in the first place? What they said was, we're going to get great gain. And that had appeal to this greed inside of us. Now, your bent may not be greed, it may be something else. But I think point one is there's this bent toward greed, this bent toward sin, whatever it might be in your case. Secondly, verse 14, verse 11, there is this group appeal. My son, if sinners entice you, they say, come with us. Cast your lot, there's verse 14, among us. There is this group appeal. And notice, at first, it may be harmless. If you just took the first thing they said, and of course this is the condensed version of it, they just say, come with us. Then at the end, that's verse 11, at the end in verse 14 they say, cast your lot with us. So there is this group appeal, and there is also within us this desire to want to belong to a group. So the second step is the group appeal. Third step, I would say, is verse 10. Do not consent. Now let me pause here for a second. That says to me that step three is you're responsible for what happens next. That all of us have within us a bent toward evil, a bent toward sin. Then we encounter some context, some group, some situation where it appeals to that sinful side of us. And at some point we have to say, yes, we have to consent. And so what I think this passage is saying is, you are personally responsible. I don't care what the bent is inside, and I don't care what the situation is on the outside. You are personally responsible. Don't consent. That's the third point. Point four. I think there is in this passage that even if you consented to go with them, you've got to continue to participate with them. So you're not only responsible to say no at the beginning, you need to not walk with them. And that's verse 15. Do not walk in their way, keep your foot from their path. Don't associate with them. So to say it another way, the first thing that happens is I have this bent toward sin. The second thing that happens is I meet this situation that appeals to that bent. Then I have to say yes to it, and then I have to keep going after it. I have to walk in it. And when that happens, Solomon says, verse 19, so is the way of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of the owner. So, all I'm doing is trying to lay this out as I think it happens in chronological order. And it starts with our bent towards sin, the appeal of the group, me saying yes, me keep saying yes, and the ultimate end is destruction. Sin and destruction. Sin and death. All right, I want to make two applications to this. If you understand this passage and you understand all the ramifications of it, then I think there are two powerful points we need to ponder. And number one is, what's the first thing this passage ought to say to you? You need to know yourself. You need to know who you are. And what I mean by that is he gets to verse 19 and he says, so is everyone that's greedy for gain. What's your bent towards sin? For some people, it's greed, possessions. That may not be your thing. Yours may be immorality, pleasure. Yours may be violence, power. The very kinds of things that were wrapped up in this original invitation. But you need to know your own heart. And everyone, I repeat, everyone has a dark side to his soul. We're born sinners, and there is that sinful side, and just because you come to Jesus Christ and trust Him and are forgiven, it doesn't take that sinful side away, and it won't until we die and be with the Lord. So you need to know what your bent is. I am of the opinion that your bent comes from your past experiences and your own personal consent. A whole bunch of factors. Apparently, somewhere in my early childhood, somebody fed me a banana. And ever since, something within me identified with that
And I go bananas over bananas. There is rarely a day that passes that I don't eat at least one and very often two bananas. I love bananas. That's my bent toward fruit.
Now, when I was young, my mother said, I don't care whether you drink or not, it's in the refrigerator. Just don't do it behind my back. And I had my first and last beer and something within me said, pfft. And I've never had another one since. I wasn't even a believer at the time. So I don't know what all goes on. I just know that some people taste it and love it and they go after it and other, you know. Know what I'm saying? I just know this. You better know your heart. You better know where your bin is so you can recognize evil situations when you see them. The second thing I would say is, this passage is telling us, you not only need to know you, you need to know the character of other people. You need to know people. You need to be a people reader. I've been aware for years that the book of Proverbs talks about different kinds of people. The wise, the fool, the simpleton, the sluggard, you know, the seductive woman, the violent man, on and on and on and on and on. I read the other day, somebody has said that there are 180 characters in the book of Proverbs. Wow. Didn't know there were that many. Makes sense. There are all kinds of combinations. And you need to know these various characters. That's what's going on in this passage. Now let me tell you why. We're going to do a quick little Bible study here. You got your finger in Proverbs 1. We're coming back. Turn to Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs chapter 13 and look at verse 20. Proverbs 13:20. He who walks with wise men will be wise. But the companions of fools will be destroyed. Should you know other people? Sure. Why? Because what they are like is what you're going to be like if you hang around them. Right? Look at another one. Look at Proverbs chapter 12. And look at verse 26. The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. Or underline that. It's the point. It's the bottom line. Choose your companions carefully. Why? Because you could end up destroyed. They could appeal to that sinful side and you could end up self-destroyed. Now, what I'd love to do, I'm saying you need to know other people. You need to avoid them. I think it'd be fascinating if we could take a minute. I think it'd be very helpful and practical just to mention some people you ought to stay away from. So if you've got a Bible, I'm going to show you a few. Well, just turn with me to Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10 and look at verse 23. To do evil is like sport to a fool, but the man of understanding has wisdom. What does that verse tell you? Anytime anybody makes light of sin, run. Because that's a fool. All right, turn to chapter 22 and look at verse 24. This one's powerful. Chapter 22, verse 24. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your own soul. If you meet an angry man, run. Why? It says it real plain. You'll become like him, and worse yet, you'll destroy your own. Run. Run. Now, all of us get angry. That's not the point. But if you meet somebody who is habitually angry, they're an angry person, and it seeps out all the time, be careful, or you'll take up their habits, and you'll be like them. And that will lead to your own destruction. Let me mention two more. We could do this all day. But I want you to turn to chapter 16 and look at verse 29. Chapter 16, verse 29 says, a violent man entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. We had a lot of single ladies in this congregation. I'd say to them, if you start dating a fella and he's given to violence, find another boyfriend. Isn't it amazing the number of cases I've counseled with where a wife said to me her husband was knocking her around and physically, and come to find out they were doing it when they were dating. You know? That should have been the tip off. Leave him then. I'm not picking on men. I want to give equal opportunity to the ladies, so turn to chapter 2. And look at verse 16. Solomon says to his son, to deliver you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God, for her house leads down to death and her path to death. So girls ought to stay away from violent men, and men ought to stay away from seductive women. What's the point? The point is, choose your companions carefully, because they just may appeal to that sinful side, and that may lead to your destruction. You can hang around with the right group, the wise group, and become wise or wiser, and you can hang around with fools and become fools and end up foolish behavior and end up self-destroyed. So choose your companions carefully, because we've all got this sinful bent that they can appeal to and lead us in the wrong direction. I'm originally from Florida, as you know. Down in Florida, we have a creature called an alligator. I don't know a lot about alligators because I'm from the Florida Panhandle and most of the alligators are down in South Florida, but I read once that there's a species of alligator that is so lazy they rarely go hunt for food. They crawl up on the bank, they open their mouth, they lie there like they're dead. After a while, flies come and land on this moistened tongue that's hanging out. And after the flies start swarming around, lizards come up. And they come up so they can have